I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. I'm Joe Beamer. Mark is taking some personal time off, but we expect him back soon. In the meantime, I am really happy to be here with you guys. We've got Sue, we've got Fred, we've got Ethan. The gang is all here, and as I said, great to be with you on this Thursday afternoon, and we are going to We've got some things to get into today here on 97.1 FM Talk. We'll be talking about, we touched on it a little bit yesterday, the Sydney Sweeney ad that, I mean, you talk about ridiculous things for the left to freak out about. This is one of them. And I don't know if you saw the Dunkin' Donuts follow-up ad that's making the rounds. So we'll be talking about that. We'll also go back to talking about mayoral candidate in New York City, Zoran Mamdani. And, you know, a lot of people will say, I hear this all the time on my show, you know, Joe, that's not what's happening here. Why are we talking about it? But I think it's really important to see. I mean, New York City, the biggest city in America, right? It's still a top tourist destination for people to go and see. And it's also, I mean, it's a Democrat hotbed, right? I mean, this is the mindset of many Democrats around the United States, especially in big cities, just like here in St. Louis. So we'll be talking about that later on in the show. Also, back to Sam Page. He is the St. Louis County executive who's under indictment. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. We'll continue on that. And then I love to fly, right? Not because I like flying. I just like getting somewhere quickly. And I love vacation because if I'm on an airplane, it usually means I am going somewhere fun and I'm going to have a good time and enjoy myself. But these last few vacations for me, the flights have been interesting, right? I've noticed more turbulence. I went to Richmond about a month ago, and I mean, two of my flights, the turbulence was so bad. I mean, we're talking in the middle of summer. The turbulence was so bad that they didn't even bring the drink cart out. Now, not that I needed something from the drink cart. I'm just saying that's how bad it was on back-to-back flights. So we're going to be talking about these continued issues with turbulence, especially with a Delta flight that the turbulence was so bad, it was forced to land in Minneapolis. And then it is a big day. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. It is MLB trade deadline day. And isn't it interesting, right when we got off the air yesterday, my New York Mets made a trade with the St. Louis Cardinals. And Ethan and I were talking off the air about that pickup for the New York Mets. And it was, by the way, someone that Ethan said when we talked about it yesterday could be on the trade block for the Cardinals. And we'll be talking right after the deadline hits. Deadline hits at 5 p.m. St. Louis time. We'll be talking with Scott Warman. He is the studio host for FanDuel Sports Midwest. And he'll be talking about what trades the Cardinals made and really how are the Cardinals set up for the rest of the season, right? I mean, they are still in the wild card talk. I'm a very optimistic person, so maybe there are people out there who don't feel the same way I do. But when you're within, you know, I mean, when you're within single digit games, I feel that you're still in the hunt. Again, how much do you want to risk to make that run? But again, as a Mets fan, I have seen my New York Mets. When I was in college, I saw the Mets blow, you know, a double-digit lead in the month of September. So it's very possible to still make a run. So we'll talk with him and see where he thinks it all stands here. on this trade deadline day. We're also the president, Donald Trump, and this is something I wasn't aware had gone away in schools. The presidential fitness test. Do you remember this? I remember, they had the gym all dressed up for the presidential fitness test back in my day when I was in school. But apparently they've gotten rid of the presidential fitness test at a time where a majority of Americans are at the very least overweight. We are seeing we're seeing so many health issues. More, what's the word I'm looking for? We're seeing more episodes of what used to be rare health issues, higher percentage of, I mean, we're talking preteens who are pre-diabetic. I think not only do we have to get the presidential fitness test, I think we need RFK to be looking into what's in our food, what kids are eating these days, and, it's how sick are we making, especially our kids. I mean, obviously we want everyone to be healthy. We want everyone to turn their lifestyle around if they're in that high percentage of overweight or in that percentage of obese Americans. But we want to make sure that our kids get a fair shot and that our kids are, they learn the routine of daily workout, of eating healthy, making sure you don't, you don't eat 10,000 calories a day unless you're Michael Phelps, and responsible eating and just mindful eating. And, so many of us are just guilty of, oh my gosh, I'm hungry, let me go look at the snack machine. That might be okay for you. You don't want to pass that down to your kids. So I am all for stressing fitness in schools and trying to reverse some of these dangerous numbers. We all remember COVID and the lockdowns. It was a lot worse here in New York State than most places with the lockdowns and the government control. And one thing that has always just surprised me, 5 years later, I have not been able to get an answer on this. 78% of people who were sent to the hospital over COVID, 78% were overweight or obese. Yet in the county I live in New York State, Erie County, 5 years later, they still don't list obesity or being overweight as a comorbidity to a severe COVID case. And that's always just baffled me. Gyms were closed for almost a full year here in New York State. I mean, really taking the focus off, hey, what's one way you can better prepare yourself for something like the flu, for COVID? Be in better shape. And instead, we were incentivizing sitting at home on your butt doing nothing. That is not the message we want to be sending to kids. So I applaud the president. Again, this will be an executive order he is signing today to bring back the presidential fitness test. And again, I don't know what year they got rid of it, but if you're listening to my voice, if you're at least my age of 36 or older, you remember the presidential fitness test, and it will be back in schools. Again, trying to reverse this trend in America where, diseases brought on by an unhealthy lifestyle seem to be trending up and not trending down. And when you know so much more, when we are so educated on how to be healthy and how to take care of ourselves, there should be more of an initiative in schools to make sure that we're giving kids the fair start and the fair shot at that healthy lifestyle. They told me when I was in school, you're not going to always have a calculator in your pocket. Well, they were wrong about that. And so maybe we can get rid, this is controversial statement coming, maybe we can get rid of a year of math and, replace that with fitness, how to balance a checkbook, even if it's just an app, all that great stuff. That's a discussion for a different time. But I'm a big fan of the presidential fitness test. I'm a big fan of getting kids used to a healthy, active lifestyle. And let's make sure with this next generation, we turn the trend around. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Sydney Sweeney jeans ad that has the left freaking out. Welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And, you know, a lot of people are up in arms over the new Sydney Sweeney ad. And we are going to talk. Ethan, I'm sorry. I know you said something in my ear and I did not hear you. I apologize.
Yeah, we're working on getting our guest on right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. So we're working on that. But Sydney Sweeney jean ad, I mean, this is, you know, these are the style ads that I remember from back in the 90s. You know, I mean, the billboards that used to be up in Times Square for Calvin Klein. I mean, we all remember the Seinfeld episode of Kramer and the agreement he got with Calvin Klein after they stole his Ocean cologne idea. This is nothing new. And you've got people on the political left freaking out about it. Well, writing about it in the USA Today was Ingrid Jox, and she joins us now. Ingrid, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
What was your initial reaction when you first saw the Sydney Sweeney ad?
I think a giant eye roll, but I thought it was worth writing about because I think I just saw it as another instance of progressives not letting go of their woke agenda, their big push for DEI and everything from advertisement to college campuses. And it just seemed really, the overreaction seemed very tone deaf to me. I mean, here you have this successful, hot young woman. Why wouldn't a company like American Eagle want her to model their jeans? And I think the fact that the company is seeing a real boost from this shows that it was a good decision.
So is it Sydney Sweeney, or is it the fact that it's a straight white woman? I mean, what do you think is freaking out the left?
Oh, I mean, just the fact that in the ad, she dares to make a pun on jeans. She's got good jeans, you know, like she's got blue eyes and blonde hair, and just the whole fact she would even say that. And she says it with a smile, right? Like this is not some sort of serious treatise on race. She's just having fun with it. And so is the company. But I think it's she's blonde, she's blue-eyed, and the fact that they're playing that up, that just freaked out the liberals. And it's just so silly. That's not what the ad's about. She's just a pretty actress selling jeans.
And if you haven't heard it, this is the ad. Let's play clip 14, the Sydney Sweeney ad.
Hey, American Eagle.
Jeans are passed down from parents to offspring, often determining traits like hair color, personality, and even eye color. My jeans are blue.
Now, I mean, let me ask you this, Ingrid. You know, to me, I mean, this just looked like any other clothing ad. I mean, I grew up in the 90s. This was every time. Every time a show went to the break, it was something like this. Do you think this is a sign that the days of, you know, the Calvin Klein trans ads are done and companies will double down on something like Sydney Sweeney?
Well, I think it's a good sign that they're just open to going back to kind of these more old fashioned strategies, right? I mean, and something I've been really pleased about, and I haven't seen it, but I've not seen anything close to an apology or backtracking from American Eagle or Sydney Sweeney. And I'm really glad to see that because even a few years ago, I think if there were this kind of pressure campaign based on race or gender, you know, there would have been probably a forced apology of some kind. But I think it says a lot that that's not happening here.
No, I completely agree. And I mean, just the mindset to think that American Eagle, I mean, a company that, again, has been around as long as I can remember, is putting out, you know, Nazi propaganda and white supremacy whistles. I mean, it's just crazy that it even crosses people's mind.
It is. And honestly, as someone who also happens to have blonde hair and blue eyes, I find it offensive that that's the first thing that a lot of these liberals are pointing to, that just because you look a certain way, you must be promoting a certain agenda. That in and of itself is racist. So I'm glad to see that American Eagle just kind of embracing, highlighting a beautiful young woman. I mean, who cares what race she is? And I hope it's a sign that we're moving beyond this, you know, very narrow DEI-focused world.
I hope so, too. And let's just, because we're always going to have people like Clip 15. Let's play some of the, this is Clip 15, a TikTok reaction where a lot of these freakouts are happening.
Hey, American Eagle. Now do black and brown women. Because black and brown women also have great genes that they inherit from their parents. Did you know that?
Talking about blue jeans and white people, boycott American Eagle. Boycott the shit out of them.
A blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white woman is talking about her good genes. Like, that is Nazi propaganda.
I mean, that first one. So
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Just because you're saying a white woman has good genes, it doesn't mean that an African American woman can't also have good genes. I mean, it's crazy to say one. They're saying if you say one, it means you're saying the other is not possible. No one's saying that.
Absolutely not. And it's just ridiculous that they're stretching this to try to make that point. And it's a fun, sexy ad campaign, and you know she's playing off. I mean, blue jeans. Come on, it's a play on words, and the fact that these people don't have enough sense of humor to understand it, I think it says a lot about them.
And you mentioned in your piece in USA Today that, you know, it's not just companies that are starting to roll back, but we're starting to see this on college campuses, too, which means, you know, the next generation might not be freaking out into their TikTok.
That would be nice. I think it would be a better world for it. And I appreciate the Trump administration for using the incentive of federal funding to help encourage these universities to cut back on these programs, because I think, you know, they might sound good and, you know, beneficial for a welcoming community, but it ends up doing the complete opposite. It just leads to more distrust among different student groups, among races, among, you know, gender divides. It's just, it's harmful. And I think it's an excellent thing that we're seeing this receding from our culture.
Let me ask you this. This is something that I have said for a while now. You know, you see all of these liberals on social media, and you know, if especially when Trump got elected, right? If something doesn't go their way, I mean, it's everything is racist. Everything's you're a Nazi. I mean, do you think that goes back to, for a generation, or, you know, for at least a decade, you had college kids, if they threw a big stink about Ben Shapiro doing a show, the college would cancel it. And if you were an ultra liberal, the college played to your mindset, and really you would only hear your voices. These kids got out of college and they can't believe it. Wait, not everyone agrees with me. This is ridiculous.
No, that's an excellent point. And you know, we've seen the fruits of that kind of mindset over and over in the last, you know, I'd say especially the last 5 years. you know, this happens a lot in my business at different media companies. You have these young people coming out of college, not used to being exposed to different points of view, and they can't handle it in the workplace, in their daily lives. And that's not beneficial for anyone.
Now, when I talked about this on my show in Buffalo earlier, the discussion went to, you know, the actual jeans in the ad. The it's like this 90s style has come back full circle.
Yeah, it has. It brings back some awkward growing up years for me. But I mean, something else that these liberals who are freaking out aren't acknowledging is that all the money that is coming from at least one of the pairs of jeans that was designed in collaboration with Sydney Sweeney is going to a crisis helpline for people in need of mental health support. So, I mean, that's great. But instead of focusing on that, it's just all about her immutable characteristics that she can't do anything about. And she's just having fun with it. So I think the whole thing was silly, but it also shows a lot that I think there's plenty of progressives, Democrats, who just refuse to move on from this obsession with gender identity, DEI, and I think that was soundly rejected in our last election, and it just doesn't seem like they're getting the message.
No, they sure aren't. Hey, Ingrid, it was a great read, and I really appreciate you joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on.
That is Ingrid Jox. She is at the USA Today, and she wrote this piece, Sydney Sweeney's Jean Ad Triggers Liberals. She looks good. They don't. Make sure you go out and read that. When we come back, we will be joined by Tim Fitch. He is a former St. Louis County Police Chief and St. Louis County Councilman. He's got a pretty long resume, and we'll talk with him about Mamdani's attempted rollback of his past anti-police statements and also his thoughts on the county executive, all after this on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk, and great to be with you on this Thursday. You know, yesterday we touched on this a little bit. Zoran Mamdani, he is running for mayor in New York City. Here's a here is a clip of Zoran then and Zoran now. Let's play clip 27.
When we talk about defund the NYPD, the entirety of the push is defund the NYPD and refund all of these different social services and things that actually create safety.
The vision that we've put forward in this campaign, despite what others may say, is not to defund the police. It is, in fact, to allow those officers to respond to the serious crimes that many of them signed up to address.
I mean, even his rhetoric during the campaign from the primary to now has changed. But I mean, we have 5 years of this guy talking about defunding the police. Now, in an election where he's against Eric Adams, who's very pro-police, and former Governor Cuomo, who, you know, I wouldn't say as pro-police as Eric Adams, but more pro-police than Zoran Mamdani. Let's ask Tim Fitch about it. He's a former St. Louis County police chief and also former councilman in St. Louis County. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
What do you think of Zoran Mamdani's new explanation when it comes to police in New York, in the NYPD?
Believe him when he tells you he wants to defund the police. That's exactly what he'll plan to do. He'll say whatever he can say right now to try to get himself elected. That's not unusual. But like I said, take him for his word. Listen to what he said.
What would defunding, you know, at any level, right? We have a mayoral race here in Buffalo, New York, and in the primary, it was, you know, the defund the police senator, the state senator against the pro-police mayor, and unfortunately, the defund the police state senator won the primary. What would something like that mean? Let's say at any level, some of this defund stuff that we've heard for the last 5 years, what would that mean for a city like St. Louis, like New York, if any funds were taken from the police force?
Well, we've already seen a taste of that in St. Louis with the previous administration in the city of St. Louis, where she was very much in favor of defunding the police and did. The first thing she did was cut 100 positions out of the police budget. So we saw what happened with crime in the city of St. Louis. It continues to this day. People still don't feel safe to go downtown and many of the places in the city where they'd like to attract visitors. We're just finally starting to see some change there. I think the new mayor, I believe it when she says that she wants to add additional officers to the department, get them back as close to strength as they can get. But the damage has already been done, so it's going to take a long time to undo it.
You know, another thing we heard from people in the Mondami camp, I guess we call them the Democratic Socialists, is this idea of replacing police with social workers for certain instances. But, I mean, any instance can turn into, you know, something where you need a trained police officer. What would happen if you replace members of the force with social workers?
We've already seen that. Social workers will get hurt. They'll get killed. We've seen that. The successful programs around the country, and by the way, Joe, I agree with taking employees that work for the police department, engaging them in social services with mentally ill people on the street, homeless, things like that. However, the successful programs match up a police officer, a mental health professional, and usually like an EMS or firefighter. And in teams, the three of them will go handle those kind of incidents. But the last thing you want to do is send an unarmed civilian out there, social worker, and say, go out there and figure out this about what's going on here. Because I'll tell you one thing about the mentally ill is they're unpredictable. You don't know exactly what they're going to do. And if you send an unarmed person out there to deal with what you may think just is a simple mental health call, bad things can happen, and they do happen.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that's the reason that we have trained police officers and we have armed police officers. You know, you hear a lot of these politicians that are for defund the police, therefore taking the guns away. There's a politician here in Erie County, New York, who was on the defund the police train. He is all about, you know, taking away your gun rights. However, he at all times is protected with two county sheriffs. I mean, to me, that's hypocrisy.
Yeah, we had the same thing here. Cori Bush was a congresswoman from the first district, U.S. congresswoman, and she was a defund the police part of that crowd. But she always had security, and she said, well, people want to hurt me, so I have to have security with me at all times, which, by the way, she was paying for out of her political funds, and it was her, at that point, boyfriend. Now I believe husband that was doing the protecting. So this is what I need for me, but you can't have it.
Oh yeah, see it way too much with today's politics. You know, Tim, you were also on the council, and would love to know your thoughts on the indictment of the county executive.
It wasn't terribly surprising to me.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Said this about Sam Page for a long time, is he always rode the line between okay and not okay, and it was just a matter of time till he crossed the line, and that's what it certainly looks like he did this time. Sam Page is one of those people that most of the community, they continue to vote him back in because it's a Democratic community, and during the pandemic, which was the last time he ran, he's a medical doctor. So I think a lot of people just like, okay, he's a doctor. What all these shutdowns and sports closings and all the things that he did, he must know what he's talking about because he's a medical doctor. And so they voted him back in. I think this next time, he's 1 year away from the primary in St. Louis County. I think this is going to hurt him when it comes to fundraising. I would fully expect to see Democratic, a strong Democratic primary opponent pop up any day now and start fundraising to run against Sam Page. One thing I tell you about Sam Page, he's not going to give up. He'll fight this all the way through the end, this indictment, and hope for the best. But I think he's been wounded seriously for the first time ever to where this is going to affect whether or not he can get himself reelected. So, but that's how Sam Page is put together. The people that like Sam Page are the ones that do business with the county, that have jobs, their family, friends, they have a job with the county. Everybody else, for the most part, if you know Sam Page, you know what kind of person he is, and it's not somebody that you would want to support.
Well, you answered my next question. So you don't see Sam Page stepping down or resigning under this indictment?
Absolutely not. I think what he'll do is if he gets convicted of a felony, he's a medical doctor, he'll lose his license if he's convicted of a felony. Plus, he'll forfeit his seat. So my guess is he'll try to work out some sort of deal, whether you plead everything down to a misdemeanor. If you plead guilty to a misdemeanor, it probably won't affect his medical license, and he can only be removed by a recall of the people or if he steps down himself. I don't see his ego allowing him to step down.
One last question I have for you, Tim, back to the defund the police movement. You know, over the last 5 years, have you seen the local Democratic Party, the leaders locally, move more and more away from that? Do you think this is the kind of thing that's going to come in waves, or do you think that's a chapter we're finally about to close in St. Louis?
I think we're about to close it. There's really only one big defund the police person still in our metro area in elected office. It's Megan Green, the president of the Board of Aldermen in the city of St. Louis. She's kind of the last person standing in the defund the police crowd. And my guess, she's a short timer as well. And even Sam Page would support police initiatives. So I would give him credit for that. And all of the Democrats on the council, except for one, Lisa Clancy, also supported the police and continue to support the police. So I think it's getting to be something of the past. And when Megan Green is out of office, she kind of will be the last person standing unless she's voted back in, which could be. We'll see.
Well, Tim, that's great to hear because it never should have even been a thing. And I'm hoping, along with St. Louis, the country is moving away from that. But obviously, we have the big question mark in New York City this November.
That's right. You know, and what will happen is if he gets in office, he'll fail. He'll take a lot of New York City down with him. And I think you're going to see that in Buffalo, too, in your county there, or your city, rather, there, that, they get in office, they got all these great ideas, and then it collapses. Because that's how we know socialism works. It never is sustainable.
Yeah, the problem is New York City, there's a lot more to ruin than here in Buffalo.
Yep, that's right. Well, remember when New York City, I'm old enough to remember when they had to get bailed out by the federal government financially. Yep. So they've been through this before. They hit rock bottom. If you had never been to New York City in the 70s, I was. I will tell you, it was an absolute nightmare. It was a mess. You were scared to death in Manhattan to be in downtown New York City. And really, when Rudy Giuliani got into office, he turned it around. Despite how he is today, he did a great job of turning the city around and making it safe again. And I hope it doesn't go back to the way it was back then.
Same. And I'll tell you, as you said, every time, right, they get into power and they fail, yet you've got these Democratic socialists that somehow are still able to convince people in some parts of the country that socialism is the answer, even though time and time again it has failed.
That's right. And it'll fail again if he gets into office.
It sure will. Hey, Tim, great talking with you. We'll talk again soon, all right?
All right, Joe, take care.
That is Tim Fitch. He is a former St. Louis County police chief and former St. Louis County councilman. You know, I'll say this about Mayor Rudy Giuliani. The biggest mistake he made as mayor was endorsing Mario Cuomo over George Pataki. But, that was 30-some years ago. When we come back, we will talk a little bit more about this and also some news that was made earlier today. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Great to be with you on this Thursday. I gotta say, we I have been focused a lot on the Colbert story and being canceled, his show being canceled, because I was a huge David Letterman fan. Now, I'm sure David Letterman and I politically didn't agree, but he didn't make his show the liberal hangout, right? I mean, his show is where actors, actresses, musicians, artists, comics. I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy. Norm MacDonald was on that show a lot. Loved when Norm was on and it was a weekday and I had to go to school. The VCR was set, okay? The VCR was recording Letterman. Letterman was funny for everybody. Stephen Colbert, from the minute he took over that show, alienated half his audience. And by the way, that's fine if it works. But most people who are up at 11:35, most people who, you know, want, they want an escape. They want to be able to laugh, right? They're about to go to bed. You want something to laugh at before your day is done. Or you want to hear how your toaster is also a time machine, and we got that for you with Coast to Coast. But remember the days of Letterman when this would be the opening?
From New York, the greatest city in the world, it's The Late Show with David Letterman. Tonight, Cher.
Oh.
And Jerry Springer.
In 98?
Paul Schaefer.
I mean, that was the lineup. And in 1998, Cher and Jerry Springer, that's a pretty good lineup for 1998. Now you turn on Stephen Colbert, and it's Elizabeth Warren or tonight, Kamala Harris. That is not what you think when you think of a late night show. I mean, it's really become the liberal therapy session nightly at 11:35. And, you know, I would always just get upset because, again, it is something I used to love, the late night shows. I would flip to Leno. I would flip to Letterman. And then I would, you know, kind of just, unless there was a guest I really liked, like a Norm MacDonald or a Jim Norton, I kind of sat back until Craig Ferguson. Loved Craig Ferguson's show on the Late Late Show. Conan was funny. You don't have any of that now. I mean, you have, of the late night shows, you have four hosts who go in there with an agenda. And again, if it works, that's fine. But that's not what people watch late night TV for. If you want politics, you get it all day. You get it on the radio. You get it on cable TV. There is no shortage of politics. Late night, you want Johnny Carson, right? You want Leno. You want Conan. You want someone that's going to make you laugh no matter where you stand politically. And yes, that means jokes about the people who are in charge. But the problem with a Colbert, and especially Seth Meyers, is their jokes are fueled by hatred. You can't be funny when you're fueled by hatred. It's like Alec Baldwin's Trump. Alec Baldwin's Trump wasn't funny. Not because Alec Baldwin's not a good actor. It's because when he did Trump, he did it with a hatred. Will Ferrell's George Bush was hilarious because he was doing it as a comic actor. But now anything that's Trump, it's just fueled with this hatred, and it's all about making a point. There's no Colbert monologue that if you stood on the political right, you would laugh at. He never went after Biden. He never went after Harris. And again, every night, it's Pelosi, it's Elizabeth Warren, it's Adam Schiff. Who the hell's staying up till midnight to watch? These people are on my TV all day. And again, half the country doesn't want to hear what Elizabeth Warren says. I mean, to that point, half the country doesn't want to hear what Josh Hawley says. I get it. But there's a reason Gutfeld works and these shows don't. And it's not the political bend. It's Gutfeld has comedians on, people that are going to make you laugh. I mean, he has Jim Florentine. He's had Rich Voss on, Jim Norton. These are guys that, you know, are from the old Opie and Anthony show back in the day. They're funny. They're funny people. And again, unless you're watching the late local news, you want to laugh. And the people freaking out, again, the Elizabeth Warren's freaking out, saying that it's because of his criticism of Trump. No one is getting canceled because they criticize Trump. Most people are getting a raise in today's Hollywood or media if they're criticizing Trump. He's getting criticized because he's spending millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on 200-person staff. Are you kidding me? And they're bleeding $50 million. they're bleeding as much money as public media. That's why they're getting canceled. CBS is in the money-making business. And Kimmel will be next. You know, I think Fallon will hang on because Fallon has The Tonight Show and it's a prestigious entity. But just like we talked about in the first segment with Ingrid, America's moving away from the woke. I think America wants to move back to comedy for everybody. And yes, we poke fun at Trump. We poke fun at Biden. But we're not getting an agenda across. We're just trying to be funny. And I think America is ready for that. And if CBS wants to dip back into this late night thing, maybe go back to the Letterman style. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon, and we'll be back after this on 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.